And the court will proceed to the third case of the day, Ida Food versus the City of Chicago. Mr. Saran.
May it please the court, counsel. My name is Maurice Salem. I represent the appellants in this case. Your Honors, this case is about two Fourth Amendment search and seizure violations that correspond to two city inspections. The first one, August 22, 2002, there's an issue of whether consent is given in that. The second one, on August 28, 2002, there is no issue of consent. But what opposing counsel is contending is that that Fourth Amendment violation was not claimed. Your Honors, in my brief, I neglected to mention that this is a notice pleading jurisdiction. And in the complaint, there's a clear claim against the city for shutting the store down for 51 days. Now, Your Honors, the basis of shutting the store down was the August 28th Fourth Amendment violation. And on that basis, the second inspection's Fourth Amendment violation was claimed. But, Your Honors, even if you are to accept opposing counsel's argument, this case was disposed of on summary judgment, right after discovery was done. And the purpose of discovery is to flush out all the facts, the specific facts. And if this date was so critical, the lower court should at the very least allowed the appellants to amend the complaint. And finally, on this issue, Your Honors, the careful reading of the lower court's decision will show that the second inspection, the August 28th inspection, was really never addressed. In other words, it wasn't dismissed because it wasn't pleaded. It was just simply the issue of whether or not there was a Fourth Amendment violation was never addressed on that. And I believe the lower court simply missed that. Now, with respect to the probable cause issue, moving away from the consent, there's ample, overwhelming evidence that there's a genuine issue of disputed facts for to determine whether or not probable cause exists. The defendant, the electrical inspector Gibson, his supervisor, Mr. David Brown, testified that he did not deem it emergency to shut the store down. And also, Your Honors, he testified that he said to the inspector, defendant Gibson, not to shut the store down and let Commonwealth Edison do it. Now, in the lower court's decision on page 8, footnote 9, the lower court finds as a conclusive fact that because the plaintiff went outside and saw ComEd truck, that constitutes ComEd shutting it down. However, Your Honors, there's a lot of evidence that should show that there is a genuine issue of material fact. For example, in the appendix on page 79, you see there's a letter in there from ComEd, which is Exelon, saying that they have no record of ComEd ever coming out there and shutting the store down. Also, Your Honors, the electrical inspector Gibson testified that he has no names and no documents of anyone from ComEd coming to shut the store down, and his chief electrical inspector, Inspector Patterson, also testified that he has no names and no documents that ComEd came to shut the store down. And also, Your Honors, the plaintiff also testified that he did not know specifically who these individuals were, although he saw the ComEd truck out there. But, Your Honors, if you were to allow me to take this case to a jury, I would be able to show them that a typical relationship between a city electrical inspector and the chief electrical inspector, their relationship with ComEd electricians is so close that they could have easily gotten some ComEd people to come to the store and shut it down without authorization. Now, Your Honors, there's a list here I have, which is in the briefs, of other facts to show that there is a genuine issue of whether or not probable cause was violated. But I'd like to quickly touch on the Fourth Amendment violation before my time runs out. The Class 1 discrimination, the lower court and opposing counsel's contention is that there was no disparate treatment shown here. Your Honor, with the exception of the specific injury to the plaintiff, this case mirrors the Village of Willowbrook's case. In the Willowbrook case, the government, what they did there is they took 33 feet foot easement from the plaintiff. Now, that's not a clear violation of any laws or regulations, so it's understandable why the court would want the plaintiff to show disparate treatment. In other words, go out around town and see, do they normally take 33-foot easements from people? And that will show that there's disparate treatment. However, that's distinguishable from this case, Your Honors, because the treatment at issue in this case is very clear. Violation of court orders to allow the store to remain open while the electrical repairs were done. Ignoring a court order requiring that a work permit be issued. And a work permit still has not been issued, Your Honors. Not issuing a work permit pursuant to the statute of the City of Chicago. Also, Your Honors, sending inspectors three times a week versus once per 6 months as required by city ordinance, and other violations that are in the briefs. So, Your Honors, in this case, the disparate treatment would be that the defendants were following the laws and abiding by the city ordinance and all the regulations. That would constitute disparate treatments. Your Honors, had I known that this issue would be raised by the lower court, I would have asked the commissioner, do you normally follow the laws and regulations by the city? And I'm sure you could presume that he'll say yes, Your Honors. And so the disparate treatment should be presumed in this case, Your Honors. It's just common sense. I can't imagine somebody saying that, hey, wait a minute, there's no disparate treatment here, when a disparate treatment would require the defendants to constantly violate their own laws. So in this particular case, Your Honor, I asked the court to presume disparate treatment and let the 14th Amendment stand. And again, you know, with the second inspector coming out and doing inspections in the face of court orders and everything else, it's clearly an irrational and wholly arbitrary action, Your Honors. And it's up on its face. Your Honors, with respect to the other issues that requires Class 1 discriminations, the record shows on page 74 that there was a prior state court action that the defendant lost, which corresponds to the Willowbrook case. Also, it shows that there was ill will with respect to the community meetings, the CAP meetings, and other testimony in there that shows that there is ill will between the government and the plaintiff in this case. And also, Your Honors, we show that there was benefit with respect to campaign contributions from individuals who want that particular store because there's an empty lot next to it, and I've showed some evidence to that. Your Honors, what I'd like to do now is go back to the probable cause, and I'm sure this court understands that probable cause needs to be determined by the totality of the circumstances. In this case, Your Honors, the commissioner, Commissioner Robertson, wants either you or the jury to believe that a customer came into the store and was so shocked by the emergency nature of the electrical boxes and wirings that came to him and complained about it, Your Honors. And also, he did not remember the name of that particular concerned customer. But what this requires the fact finder to presume is that the customer had access to the electrical boxes and wires, that the customer was an electrical expert. And this is all, Your Honors, it's clearly false information by the commissioner. And that, in addition to the fact, Your Honors, that that both the commissioner and the chief electrical inspectors, one of them committed perjuries, Your Honor. It's very clear. Commissioner Robertson testified that he spoke to the chief inspector, Patterson, and wanted a good inspector. Patterson, which is Gibson, which is the one that they sent out there to shut down the store. Patterson, the chief inspector, testified repeatedly, Your Honor, because I continually asked him this question, that he did not hear of this entire incident until after it was done, until after he heard from the attorneys for the plaintiffs. So one of them has committed perjury, Your Honors. Your Honors, all this...
That's yes, obviously a serious charge. I guess I'm just not tracking that. Could you just tell me again where the perjury comes in that?
Your Honor, in the appendix on page 180, Commissioner Robertson testified that he asked the chief inspector, please get me a good inspector, because he had a concerned customer come to him about emergency, about electrical wires inside the walls. He asked that from Chief Patterson. Patterson testified in the appendix on page 187 that he did not hear about this case until after Gibson did the inspection, Your Honors, until after the plaintiff's attorney spoke with him. One of them committed perjury, Your Honor. This is very clear. It's very specific.
You mean that they're off on their chronology? Is that
No, Your Honor. It's not that they're off on their chronology. It's one is
was
saying...
Was the request for the good inspector to a specific place at a specific time, or was it simply did he ask for a good inspector?
He asked...
No. Does the record show that he asked for a good inspector or a good inspector to go to a particular place at a particular time?
To a particular place, to a specific
That's
time?
That's what the record shows?
Yes, Your Honor, because he testified that the concerned customer in the store came running to him about electrical emergencies. Yes, Your Honor.
I understand that.
Yes. Your Honor, I see my time is up.
It is.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Salem.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Mr. Gruenwald.
May it please the Court, on appeal, as you've just heard, ADA challenges only two inspections, and those are Inspector Gibson's electrical inspections that were conducted on August 20th and 28th, 2002. But the record shows that ADA consented to both of these inspections, and for that reason, it has waived any of its Fourth Amendment claims.
Does that end your discussion?
It could. I would like to... take issue with the characterization of counsel that consent is not at issue with respect to the second inspection. But, of course, to look at these inspections, you have to look at them together. And on this record, the undisputed facts show that on August 22nd, Inspector Gibson arrived at the property. He identified himself. He explained and requested to conduct an electrical inspection. It's undisputed that Mr. Fukuri, the owner of Ada Food and Liquor, agreed to let Inspector Gibson inside to conduct his inspection. On this record, it's undisputed that Mr. Fukuri agreed to let the inspector inside, and that consent was free and voluntary, and it was clear. He knew that the inspector was there to conduct an electrical inspection, and that's what he let him inside to do. He had an employee show Inspector Gibson to the back of the property to where the electrical equipment was so he could do his inspection. ADA never made any showing that the August 22nd consent was ever coerced. It's also undisputed that on that day, the inspector found two dozen electrical violations, and 10 of those were dangerous violations. Inspector Gibson explained to Mr. Fukuri that he'd found those violations and that the electricity was going to have to be shut off. And he explained, Mr. Fukuri even testified that Inspector Gibson told him he'd be coming back. So when we move to the second inspection on August 28th, it's undisputed that Mr. Fukuri already knew there were violations. He knew the electricity was going to be shut off. He knew that Inspector Gibson was coming back. So when Inspector Gibson arrives on August 28th, Mr. Fukuri, who saw a Commonwealth Edison truck parked outside, allowed Inspector Gibson back inside the store to recheck the same electrical equipment that Inspector Gibson had already received consent to check on August 22nd. There's no showing in this record that the consent and the cooperation on August 28th was coerced either. ADA argues that in their brief, they argue that the presence of the police is an issue with respect to coercing Mr. Fukuri's agreement in terms of the shutting down of the store. And there are a couple of problems with this argument. The first problem is that Mr. Fukuri clearly testified that he recalls Inspector Gibson calling the police only at the second inspection, and even then, only 10 to 20 minutes after Inspector Gibson had already been let inside the store. So there's no way under that timeline, in Mr. Fukuri's testimony, that Inspector Gibson calling the police after his second visit could have in any way affected the consent on August 22nd, 6 days earlier, or could have affected his consent 20 minutes earlier when he allowed the inspector in. There's no evidence in this record that Inspector Gibson showed up with the police on either day, or that he, before gaining entry on either day, threatened to call the police. There's no showing of coercion. Inspector Gibson's recollection was different. He recalled calling the police at the end of his first inspection. The dispute's not material here. Both parties agree that the police, if they were called, they were called at 10 to 20 minutes after Inspector Gibson was in the store. And again, moving to August 28th, even if that was the case, you have Mr. Fakhri's own testimony that he didn't agree to let Inspector Gibson inside the store under duress. Again, there's no showing here that Inspector Gibson did anything to coerce Mr. Fakhri's agreement and cooperation on August 22nd. So I would agree that the totality of circumstances matters here, but it doesn't matter for probable cause. It matters when you're looking to determine whether Mr. Fakhri's consent was free and voluntary on both days. And Mr. Fakhri's conduct on both days shows that he did, in fact, consent to both of these inspections.
You're beginning to repeat yourself.
And I'd just like to wrap up by saying it's well settled that if you consent to a search, that you've waived any Fourth Amendment claim on that search. And because Ada failed to bring a genuine issue of fact on that consent, it's waived its Fourth Amendment claims. On the remainder of our arguments, including the class of one, we rest on our brief. If there are no other questions, we respectfully ask this court affirm the district court's judgment in favor.
Thank you, Mr. Greenwald. Mr. Salem, your time has expired. If you feel there's something you have to respond to, you may have a minute.
Thank you very much. Just 2 points. All due respect to the opposing counsel, nowhere in the record does it show that the second inspection, there were any consent given to the second inspection. Also, Your Honors, in the appendix on 159, Inspector Gibson testified that he requires the assistance of the police, and quote, in cases where the tenant or landlord does not comply. And that's in the records, Your Honors. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Allen. Thanks to all counsel. The case is taken under advisement.